welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, and this hour mystery. Later on, suspense from 1962, but first, The Adventures of Sam Spade with Steve Dunn and the title role in the story The Prodigal Panda Caper, first heard on NBC on December 29, 1950.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart. Merry 29th of December.
You too, Sam. Did you take the little boy home?
Yep.
Straight home?
Well, not exactly, F. Had to make a couple of emergency stops, but we got there.
What do you mean, Sam?
Well, I got my weekly knot on the head, for one thing.
Sam, just taking the little boy home?
Like I said, F., we were derailed. There was a dash of poison, for instance. A couple of pounds of thousand-buck notes. And an infernal machine that nearly blew up half the mission district. But other than that, we had a peaceful ride home.
Why, Sam, this sounds like a caper.
Which is just what it is, Angel. Get out our special holiday bottle of Napa Valley wine, and we'll get in our premature regards to the new year, following dictation of a report entitled, The Prodigal...
Prodigal, Sam? Are you sure that's the right word?
Certainly, I'm sure. The wanderer will return to the roost. You and your big, fat roost. With our last bedtime story for 1950, namely... The Prodigal Panda Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Effie! Miss Perrine!
Oh, coming, Sam, coming. I've been looking in the dictionary.
Oh?
Sam, you've fallen into the trap.
Again?
Prodigal. Here, now see, prodigal. Given to reckless extravagance. It doesn't mean wandering at all, see? Now, people think just because the prodigal son wandered that you...
What are we talking about?
Well, the prodigal panda caper. How can a panda be given to reckless extravagance?
Well, let me see. Oh, here. Definition 3, prodigal. Yielding abundantly, luxuriant.
A panda? You mean one of those black and white...
Right, right. See note below, it says. You ready for the note below?
Where's my pencil? Oh, all right, Sam, my date. Fill in it. Two...
Master Roebuck Dozier, 2318 Delaney Street, City. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the prodigal...
panda caper.
Right. Dear Roby, I had spent a relatively pleasant day running down a case of slow pay in North Beach and, flushed with success, had returned to my office for a final check of the file. Underwood Helen, Usher Roderick, Varden Dolly, where the... Oh, Spirits Holiday, yes. I sat down, put my hat and my feet on the desk, and was loosening my collar when I noticed just to the right of my off ankle one large bag of jelly beans. Sighting past it, I saw in the corner chair an open copy of a magazine featuring on the cover a blonde in a low-cut dress taking a .38 slug from a slack-jawed thug in the background under big red letters spelling out Thrilling Crime Comics. And behind all this, sound asleep, was you. Hey, hey, Sonny. Sonny.
Hey.
Hey, wake up, will you? Come on, reveille's blowing.
Huh? Oh.
Hi, hi. How long you been here?
Oh, a long time, I guess.
What's your name?
Roby, short for Roebuck.
Well, what can I do for you, Roby?
I've been to the police. They wouldn't do anything. They said I should come to you.
You mean you got a job for me?
Yeah.
Dangerous?
Yeah, a hoist.
You mean a heist. What was it?
My panda bear.
Oh, someone stole it?
Yeah. It's not mine, really. I bought it for my little brother, Barney. Mm-hmm. He's 5 and he's always wanted one. So when I got the junk money,
Money?
Oh, bottles and papers and stuff.
Oh.
I collected it from the neighbors and earned $6.15. And Barney wanted the panda bear, so I bought it at Lacey's department store today and they stole it.
Who stole it?
Well, there was this man in the checkered coat and the lady in the red silk dress. Uh-huh. Just like the store in the comic here.
Oh.
The man looked like that, but the lady looked different.
Mm-hmm.
She had black hair and a red dress, and her eyebrows went up this way instead of sideways.
Novel.
I was walking down the street with my panda bear, And the lady called me over to a car she was sitting in and started to talk to me. And right away, the man in the checkered coat ran up and grabbed at my pan of beer. And they chased me up a fire escape. And the man pulled out a big black gun and said if I didn't come down and give him the panda, he'd shoot me and Barney and Mom. So I came down and gave him the panda.
Well, that's quite a mouthful. Oh, excuse me, Robbie. Hello?
Sam?
Yeah, Dundee.
This is Dundee.
Oh.
Sam is a little fella about 8 years old on his way over there.
No, he's here now, Lieutenant. What's the deal?
He gave us quite a story.
Well, how'd it go?
We took it down. I got it right here
good.
Somewhere. Let me see. It's about a man in a checkered coat and a lady in a red silk dress.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is. Quote, I was walking down the street with my panda bear and the lady called me over to her car.
Dundee. He hasn't changed it any.
Yeah, we got hold of his mother. Runs an elevator in the Russ building.
Good.
She says he reads too many comic books. You better send him home.
Okay, Lieutenant, thanks. Come on, Robbie.
You gonna send me home?
Lieutenant Dundee called your mother, old man, and
you don't believe me either.
Oh, it's not that, Robbie. It's just
But I can't go home without the panda bear. What do I tell Barney? I promised him. My own brother.
Oh, he's home now waiting?
Yeah.
Well, tell you what I'll do, Robbie. You let me put you in a taxi and send you home, and I'll take the case.
You'll get my panda back?
Wouldn't be at all surprised. So if Barney's face hits the floor, just tell him Samuel Spade Incorporated's working on it.
Only one thing.
Huh?
I haven't any money left.
Oh, you've got jelly beans, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay, you can pay me off in jelly beans. Now, come on now, let's find a taxi. Which we did, Robbie. Like the psychology book said, I didn't discourage the child imagination, but I did try to tout you off thrilling crime comics and onto Alice in Wonderland. This, I could see, would take some doing. It was almost closing time when I got to Lacey's, but I talked my way past the man at the door and hustled up to the sixth floor and the toy department. The clerks were doing whatever clerks do at 5:30, but I found a handy floor walker.
Dear me, Mr. Spade, I just don't know. I just don't know.
You mean you counted your cash and everything, but you
it's not that, Mr. Spade.
Oh.
I am perfectly willing to stretch a point to please the little fellow.
Uh-huh.
We like to think we are human here, you know.
Well, that's nice. That you like to think so, I mean.
But you see, something very strange happened this afternoon. Come over this way, sir, by the escalator.
Uh-huh.
We had the giant pandas at this counter here. 25 of the large size. I assume that's what you're interested in.
I guess so. Then what then?
Well, for Christmas, they didn't do anything.
Just sat here, huh?
Yes. Mm. But would you believe it, sir? This afternoon, all 25 were sold.
Well, how do you account for that? New Year's gaiety?
Well, if you want my personal opinion, it's Miss Greenbrier, the new girl who came to work yesterday. She is endowed with...
I know just what it takes to sell pandas. Well, how about the junior model?
Medium. Yes, now, let me see. There were a few under the counter here.
Good.
Where?
What?
I was wrong. Here is a big one.
Well, lucky me. How much?
$5.79 plus tax. I'll make the slip out, and you can get your change over at the bank.
An impressive panda bear, Roby. It was hard to figure out how you could lose anything that big, and harder still to figure out how I'd explain this kind of thing to people who stopped me on Market Street. Be that as it may, my floor walker friend took my cash, tore off the sales slip, and I was about to set sail with my panda when I heard him make the kind of a noise floor workers make when they see what he was looking at.
Miss Greenbrier!
He pointed weakly, turned pale even by floor walker standards, and sagged to the deck. I turned in time to see Miss Greenbrier collapse at the top of the escalator and watched her come down, draped across three steps like the cover of one of your books of bedtime stories, Roby. She was the last passenger of the day, or so I thought. When I looked closer, I saw she wasn't a passenger. She was freight. At the lamp counter on the floor above, busily adding up receipts as if nothing had happened, was a dark type built along Dragon Lady lines.
I'm very sorry, sir, but we closed promptly.
I want to know about the girl who just went down the escalator.
Miss Greenbrier?
Yeah, notice anything strange about her?
Why, is she ill?
Yeah, did she look ill?
I thought there must have been something wrong. I said hello to her, and she didn't pay any attention to me. It was only a second ago.
Where'd she come from?
Around the corner. I think she'd been at the wrapping desk.
She had. It was a 10-size sheet of heavy brown paper, a batch of metered postage tape, and a shipping label addressed to Master Frankie Carson, 281 Avenida Ruiz, Havana, Cuba. Downstairs, I found my floorwalker friend had come around and was bending over Miss Greenbrier with an impressive-looking gent with gray at the temples.
Good heavens, it can't be. It just cannot be, that's all.
I'm afraid she is, though.
In laces, it's unheard of. Why should she be... Good heavens, in my department, too.
Excuse me, floorwalker.
Hmm?
This is Mr. Spade. He was with me when it... Oh, dear.
I'm Dr. Kempthorne. I was exchanging some Christmas gifts when...
Any idea what killed her?
Well, it's pretty hard to tell without an examination, and I don't have my things with me. Heart, possibly.
Natural causes?
Well, of course. Why, do you have reason...
There are more natural places to die than at the top of an escalator.
And in my department at Lacey's, too. Good heaven.
Well, who can say? Have to look up the girl's history. If she had a heart condition, well...
Sure, sure. Meanwhile, I'll call homicide. They've nothing better to do. For a minute, I thought I'd been reading too many comic books, Roby, but things settled down when they pulled out the records and found Miss Greenbrier had had a heart condition of long standing, and the medical examiner wrote it off as natural causes. So, hoping you would consider a jelly bean bonus for promptness, I picked up my panda and went. Outside, I'd gone about 10 steps when...
Ah! Hi, Humphrey.
It was Larry Healy, the cop who drives for Lieutenant Dundee, sitting in a patrol car.
Oh, you and Bogart. Now, who's it for?
A little kid in the mission.
How come?
What do you mean, how come? I'm buying a panda bear for a little kid in the mission who likes panda bears. Does that have to be explained?
Okay, Sam. Okay. It just hit me. The bear ain't turned out quite right. He needs a necktie.
Oh?
I just happen to have one here my brother-in-law got me for Christmas. Here, give me.
Larry, how long has there been bad blood between you and your brother-in-law?
Bad blood? Listen, even when we were friends, he gave me ties like this. There you are. On your way, Sam.
Thanks. Taxi! The cab let me out near the end of Delaney, and I started walking up the row of dingy pre-earthquake flats towards your house, Roby, at the end of the street. Parked at the curb was a discordant note in this hard-pressed neighborhood. A sleek, custom-built red convertible. One of the kind that looks like it can go 90 miles an hour standing still. The same can be said for the Day Minute. Also a discordant note. You see, San Francisco is a very big, large city. You just don't run into a dame at the lamp counter in Lacey's and half hour later in a dumpy neighborhood in the mission unless she wants it that way.
Well, hello.
Hello, Dragon Lady.
Oh, silly.
You must sell a pass on the lamps.
The car?
Mm-hmm. But don't try and explain that now. Just tell me why you followed my cab.
Follow you? Why, Mr. Smith?
Come on. What is it?
You're embarrassing me.
I know. Since that moment at the lamp counter, you can't get me out of your mind. Well, that's a perfectly normal reaction.
No, it's not that. It's... Oh, dear.
The panda bear. You want it in the worst way.
You're kind of attractive as men go, Mr. Spade. Could you give me a light, please?
Sure. Holding the match up to her cigarette, three things hit me. The black hair, the red dress, and eyebrows that went up instead of sideways. At that point, the sleeve of a checkered overcoat with a big arm inside it came around under my chin from the rear, and the fourth thing hit me. How long I had dwelt in Panda Land, I don't know, but it was real nice while it lasted. I was a panda, too, I remember, and I was going somewhere with a big, overstuffed private detective under my arm when a lady panda batted her big brown eyes at me and began pulling my nose. She seemed to have a very, very high voice.
Wake up, Mr. Spade. Rumbly's blowing. I call Lieutenant Dundee, Mr. Spade. He's on his way. Lucky. Over here.
Good Christopher, Sam. What happened?
Well, it was this way, Dundee. I was walking down the street with my panda bear, and the lady called me over to the car she was sitting in and started to talk to me. And right away, the man in the checkered coat ups.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. Van Heflin stars this Sunday in State Fair, another outstanding 60-minute production by Theater Guild on the air. Co-starring in this exciting broadcast is one of the leading families in show business, Gene Lockhart, Kathleen Lockhart, and daughter June. It's a gala New Year's Eve broadcast when Theater Guild presents State Fair. Sunday over most of these NBC stations also means another hour and a half with Tallulah Bankhead in radio's greatest spectacle, The Big Show. Among Tallulah's guests will be Ken Murray, Gloria Swanson, Margaret O'Brien, Jose Ferrer, and many more. Now back to the Prodigal Panda Caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
It was a humiliating experience, Roway, riding back to headquarters in black defeat. But dear, good Lieutenant Dundee, however, was the soul of patience and understanding.
What do you take me for, Spade, an idiot?
Look, Dundee, all I want you to understand is that this dame in the hopped-up convertible...
I've had three rides on that merry-go-round now, and I'm sick of it. The dame in the red dress and the guy in the checkered coat. They take your wallet?
No.
Your watch? Other valuables?
No. Just my panda.
Sam, are you trying to tell me there's a hot panda racket going on?
Dundee, boy. Look closely now as I take off my hat.
What?
There. See? Now, as you know, my head ordinarily does not come to a point. But this protuberance was made by a gun butt, not by imagination.
So someone slugged you. I believe that, Sam. But this panda bear thing... Dundee. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah.
You were saying something about my panda bear, Dundee.
Yeah, maybe I ought to take it back. That dame at the store this afternoon, the one who sold him?
Miss Greenbrier.
Yeah. I just finished the postmortem. No heart attack. She was poisoned.
It's a strange thing, Mr. Spade, very strange. I leave my business thoughts at the store.
Floorwalker, just try and remember the Dragon Lady's name, huh?
Dragon Lady. My good gracious, I can't remember my own name. I'm so upset.
Oh, now concentrate now. Look, dark hair, up-tilted eyebrows, red silk dress. Works in lamp department on 7th floor.
I can picture her so plainly.
Dark hair, Flora Walker.
Dark hair.
Upshot eyebrows.
Eyebrows and the red dress.
Yes.
Red. Scarlet.
Scarlet.
Scarlet, that's it.
Easy now. I got a list of employees right here. I'll tell you. Scarlet. Scarlet Townsend.
Scarlet Townsend. That's the dame.
Flora Walker. Scarlett Townsend!
Yeah, she lives here, right in this room.
Move out!
Today!
Well, how come? I said, how come, landlady? Why'd she move?
Me!
Oh!
I tried to keep her on the right track, but her age, you can't tell on nothing. So when she bring that no good dame around here, I put my foot down. I said, Scarlett, you're
what
out.
No good dame? What no good dame, landlady?
Crystal McCall.
Oh.
Here. I found this just now as I was cleaning the room. Picture of Crystal McCall. Now, ain't that a swell way to have your picture taken?
The name rang a bell, and so did the picture. Crystal herself and the altogether. When I got around to the face, I made a startling discovery. Crystal was also the late Miss Greenbrier.
Well, don't look at it all day, young man.
When did you see this girl last, landlady?
This morning. Oh. She and a fella in a checkered coat come around to pick up Scarlet in a big red open car.
Know the fella?
Nope, never saw him before. But I'd sure know that car. Oh, you ought to see it.
You're not telling me a thing, landlady. I have. In Los Angeles, I'd have been dead, but San Francisco is not a convertible town. I found a free phone and began calling the dealers, figuring a bright red custom-built convertible is something you remember, whether you see it or sell it. An hour of this got me nowhere, and I'd begun to wonder if the car had been smuggled up from the unmentionable side of the Tehachapi when the wind changed.
Sold the yeller one a while back.
Thanks, but near misses don't count, friend.
But the buyer had it painted red. Special job.
Well, you're improving. Who's the buyer?
Kim Thorne.
Dr. Kim Thorne?
Right, Dr. Jules Kim Thorne. Lives on Motley Drive in Burlingame. That's the only red one I know.
Great. That's the only red one I need.
Mr. Spade, this is utterly unbelievable. And I certainly don't intend to stand here all night discussing the pros and cons of panda bears.
All right, Kim Thorne, let's slide over into your field.
Meaning what?
The sweet young thing at the store. It turned out dirty.
The heart attack?
The poison attack.
Well, suicide, you suppose?
What do you suppose?
Well, I'm sure I don't know.
Look, why don't we hold hands and tell the truth, huh?
You'd better run along, Spade. I've had about all of this that I intended...
Look, the dead dame was Crystal McCall. Does that mean anything to you?
No.
The same Crystal McCall who was running around with a hood named Frankie Casella, formerly of New York, now of Havana, by Department of Justice request.
This is all very interesting. What has it to do with me?
She was riding around in your red convertible this morning, for one thing. That's a hot car, you know. I took a close look at it 2 hours ago and got slugged. I don't know how you score these things, Ken Thorne, but in my book, this calls for a couple of answers.
You're right. You're right, it does.
Where's the car?
It's gone.
Who has it?
My chauffeur. This is the last straw, I guess. There's no point in covering up for him any longer.
Who is he?
Lenny Fliegel.
Oh, an ex-con, isn't he?
Yes. I thought I could straighten him out. He's been missing for 2 days this time. He just took the car and left. I knew he had something to do with that girl in the toy department at Lacey's, so I went there today. I guess I was too late.
You think Fliegel killed her?
I don't know. I don't know. Where did you see the car?
Near the end of Delaney Street. What's the license number?
49H822.
Oh.
I'd better report stolen. If you need me to testify, please...
Feel free to call. That I will, Dr. Ken Thorne. Bye. What I had in mind, of course, was to call Lieutenant Dundee and have him slap a 24-hour tail on the good doctor, but something intervened. Halfway down the walk to the street, my eye fell on a round plastic object about the size of a nickel lying in the grass. Clearly, the eye of a giant panda. Since two other eyes were obviously watching me through Dr. Kim Thorne's front curtains, I continued gaily on to my cab, drove up a half block, got out, and walked back. Just in time to see Ken Thorne pull away from the curb in his other car, heading towards El Camino and points north. Well, this left me free to prowl at will, and four match books later, I had found two more eyes, a pocket full of panda skin, and a goodly scoop of panda upholstery. The trail led to the garage. It was no wonder his car was stolen. He must have had to leave it on the street all night because there was no room for it in the garage, which had been turned into a kind of panda abattoir. Crammed to the rafters with panda bears, all the giant size, too, in various stages of dishabille. Legs, arms, eyes, and innards. A sight to chill the heart of any but the sturdiest private detective, Ruby. But I braced myself and carried on.
Homicide, Dundee.
This is Sam, Dundee.
Sam, where are you calling from?
Phone booth and a drive-in on El Camino. Listen, the license number on the red custom job is 49H822. And the guy driving it is Lenny Fliegel, an ex-con.
Don't talk to me about that car. Larry Healy picked it up tonight going 90 on the Bayshore.
Great.
Lousy.
Why? What happened?
Next time I see one of them panda bears, I'm going to spit right in its eye. So Larry pulls the guy down, and first thing he sees is the panda bear with a necktie.
What about the dragon lady?
She came second. All Larry can think of is the hot panda bear figures they stole it, so he takes it back to the patrol car to return it to the kit.
No.
Yeah. By the time he got the exhaust smoke out of his eyes, they were gone. Oh, what's that license number again?
49H822.
You sure?
Positive. I'm looking right at it. Oh, Sam. Dundee.
Yeah?
We're all at Anderson's Drive-In on El Camino. Put it on the air. Which just shows you how slow I can think, Roby. The red job was staring at me with its big chrome eyes outside the plate glass window. Fliegel and the dragon lady, bless them, were having a Saturday night blue plate displayed attractively on the tray racks hung from the car doors. I sidled out of the phone booth and through the kitchen, thereby coming up on the car from behind.
More coffee, honey?
No, we better get going.
Plenty of time.
Mind if I join you, Fliegel?
Huh?
He reached and I pushed, and instead of his gun, he came up with half a hamburger. It was too harsh a light for the dragon lady to operate effectively, and by the time Larry Healy and the foul car pulled up, they decided to do it the easy way.
You all comfy back there?
Lovely, Larry. Fliegel? Dragon lady?
Shut up.
What about the red job? What are you going to do with it?
Flaring?
Oh, and pound it till the lawyers are through talking. Sam, you want to go by way of Delaney Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why Delaney Street?
Larry delivered the panda.
Huh?
Sure, to the kid, Roby Dozier. We'll have to go and pick it up.
Lenny.
Yeah.
What's it worth, Flegel? $50,000? $100,000?
Little kid's got it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Carcello will be disappointed, Flegel. With the tax boys watching both him and Crystal, it looked like a safe way to get some of his dough out of the country to him.
Wasn't my idea. I hated him. I did 8 years for him, Spade. I could have killed him.
Shut up, Lenny.
I don't care anymore. The heck with it. Look, it wasn't me. The guy who's running things for him here is Dr. Kemthorne, but Crystal had the dough. He killed her. He took her to lunch today.
Lenny!
Go ahead, Lenny. So he poisoned her. Then what?
She'd fixed up one of the pandas. He didn't know which. Stuffed it with bills. 80, 100,000. I don't know. Anyway, you'll find the money in the red car under the back seat.
Under the seat? What are you talking about? It's in the panda. The kid's got it.
Look, why do you think I'm telling you this, you stupid flatfoot? I fixed that thing for Carcella myself after we took the dough out. What kid? It's got a bomb in it.
I don't remember much about the ride from then on, Roby. All I could see was a white line unwinding in the headlights. But somehow we got to the end of Delaney Street and around that corner again. Roby! Roby!
Over here, in the alley.
Roby. Roby, are you hurt?
No, just resting.
Where's the panda?
Well, I'm through with pandas, and so is Barney. Next junk money, I'm going to buy him an elephant.
What happened?
Well, the policeman brought it.
Yeah?
I started home with it when a car drove up, and a man with gray hair got out.
Kemthorne, what then?
Same thing. He grabbed it and got in his car and drove off. He's around the corner there playing with it. Go ask him. I don't care anymore.
Around the corner? You mean he... Period. End of report. A highly inconsiderate thing to do to a panda, F. But I'll give him one thing.
What thing?
He had the good grace to park in front of a vacant lot before starting to tear it apart.
Oh.
And, of course, to coin a phrase, he saved the people some money. And now, if you're a good, efficient girl and run that through your infernal machine, who knows what I'll have in store for you when you're through. No jelly bean still work is done. Now, scoop, scoop, scoop. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Friday means another visit to that entertaining eat establishment, Duffy's Tavern. Archie, the manager, and his whimsical friends have cooked up another fresh half hour of laughs and typical Duffy's Tavern madness. And you're all invited. There's also another delightful adventure with Chester A. Riley, played by William Bendix, tonight on The Life of Riley. Keep your dial set to NBC for the very best in radio entertainment.
Official?
Yeah. I like the black ones.
Lay off, lay off. Well, you're no favorite eating all the black ones. Yeah. They're my favorite still now. Mm. Ah, Master Robot Dozier. Mm, very well.
Sam.
Yeah?
I hope Roby appreciates you.
No, only just a kid. Why don't you appreciate me?
Oh, I appreciate you, Sam.
Well, I appreciate you too, sweetheart. You're so pretty and so efficient.
What am I, Sam?
And so good about not hitting you all the time for your back salary. Yep. If when I stop and think of you, I got all choked up.
Me too. The black one.
Come here. Huh? Angel?
Yes?
It's all yours, dear. The rest of the jelly beans. Happy New Year.
Oh. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. The ring title is Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by Harold Swanton. Join us again next week, same time, for another adventure with Sam Spade. Enjoy the magnificent Montague, then Duffy's Tavern on NBC.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of December, 1950.
You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Back in June of 1942, the program Suspense began with its first episode and would quickly live up to what it billed itself as, which was radio's outstanding theater of thrills, but also be one of the longest-running programs on the CBS radio network in terms of stories of this kind, running for about 20 years on the network, producing well over 900 broadcasts. What we'll hear next is their seventh-to-last episode from August 12, 1962, called The Silver Shoe.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of The Silver Shoe, written especially for Suspense by Robert Reddick.
That you just take for granted. I mean, you don't question them. Like if somebody dies, and you've been to the funeral and watched them lower the coffin into the grave. You just got to say to yourself, well, that's the way it is. It's all over. Maybe if you care a lot for somebody like I did for Corey, maybe they go on living in a way in your mind. Not really living, but well, kind of living in your thoughts or your memory or your dreams. But that's all. So when I saw this girl sitting in a drugstore 2 years after Corey's funeral, well, naturally I had to figure she was somebody who just happened to look a lot like her. I mean, wouldn't you? I wouldn't have been shocked if she'd just been sitting there at the counter drinking her coffee. But she was doing something that, well, I guess I'd seen Corey do 100 times. She was holding a spoon upside down, dabbing little strokes with it on her napkin, like it was a paintbrush, drawing imaginary little pictures on it. And when she spoke to the counter man, it was with Corey's own sweet, familiar voice.
Will you let me have a check, please?
Sure. What'd you have?
Egg salad sandwich and coffee.
Okay, 50 cents, beautiful.
I guess I must have looked pretty strange standing there staring at her, but I couldn't help myself.
You want something, buddy?
Huh? Oh, yeah, a cup of coffee.
Cup of coffee, coming up.
I couldn't take my eyes off her. I watched her pay the check, watched every movement she made, every step she took as she walked out of the door. And they were Corey's movements, Corey's steps, every one of them.
Kind of cute, huh?
What?
Nice looking chick.
Does she come in here a lot?
Yeah, once in a while. She's one of the dames works down the street at the dance hall. Here's your coffee.
Thanks, I don't want it. Here's your dime.
Huh? Oh, sure, Tiger.
I had to. A few doors away, there was an entrance lit up with a lot of neon and stuff saying it was a dance hall, and I saw her walk into it. I felt kind of funny about following her, but, well, somehow I couldn't do anything else. Inside, there was this sort of pink ceiling over a long flight of stone steps leading down into the dance hall. Well, I bought a ticket at a little booth at the bottom, and then I went into this big room where the music was playing. I didn't see her anywhere, but a bunch of other girls came running up to the railing and started calling out to me.
Sailor, I want to talk to you.
Hey,
meet you.
You got a cigarette, Sailor?
Oh,
sure.
He always gets a pretty one.
What made you pick me, honey?
May I ask you, Sailor? What made you pick me?
Well,
I can't see very well to smoke this when it isn't lit. How about you dig down in your bell bottoms, honey, and bring a lady up a match?
I keep them up here in my breast pocket.
Well, good for you.
Did you notice the sign over the entrance, honey? 50 girls.
50 gorgeous, exotic dancing partners.
Hmm?
Well, of course, even when this joint is jumping, there's only 22 of us. But I mean the other part. Do you think I'm gorgeous and exotic, honey? Is that why you picked me?
I don't think I know what you mean.
You know what gorgeous means, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Well, exotic means weird, honey. Strange. Come on, baby. Buy me some tickets. And while you're out there on the floor holding me tight in your arms, you can tell me how exotic I am.
Oh, well, I really came in here looking for somebody else. She's about 5'3" and has light brown hair and blue eyes.
Ha! Just like half the girls in America. Besides, if you don't see her, she ain't here. Who told you she worked here anyway?
Here. This picture in my wallet. She looks like this girl.
No, somebody's kidding you. We ain't got nobody here looks like that.
Oh, but I saw her come in here.
Look, I ought to know. I've been working here for 4 years. I tell you, we got no girl like that. Now, why don't you just forget her and concentrate on me? Anything the matter with me?
Oh, no. No, it's just...
You bet there ain't. Now, don't you run away, sailor. I'm going in and powder my nose. And don't let any of these other dames latch on to you. And when I come back, I'll show you the way a patriotic lady treats the Navy.
She walked away. I began to figure maybe I was mistaken after all about seeing Corey or this girl coming in here, that maybe I'd lost her on the street, that it was somebody else I'd seen in the neon light. And I was just about to leave when I saw her again, sitting alone at a table in a half-darkened corner clear across the room. She was dressed different now in a sort of spangly silver gown that left her shoulders bare. She looked just like Corey did the night I took her to the McKendricks' ball. In a sort of a daze, I walked across the dance floor and over to the table where she was sitting. I guess she was thinking about something, because she didn't look up until I was just about standing next to her. Hi.
Hi, yourself.
I saw you upstairs at the drugstore.
Did you?
Yeah. She had a strange expression on her face. Kind of like I figured mine must have looked. Sort of surprised. Like she couldn't quite believe what she was seeing.
You know something?
Hmm?
When I first looked up just now, it was almost like I knew you from somewhere.
Yeah.
Knew you real well. You seemed to remind me of someone. I can't remember who. Gives me a funny feeling, you know what I mean?
She told me to buy her some dance tickets at the little booth. Well, I did. Then I came back and I sat down with her at her table. I told her of how she reminded me so much of someone, too. I've got a photograph of her. I'll show it to you. There. That's Corey. Well, doesn't she look...
Yeah, she does.
I'm sorry about following you down here from the drugstore, but...
Oh, that's all right, Joey. You don't have to apologize. I understand.
How did you know my name?
What?
You called me by my name. How did...
Oh, is your name Joey?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, that's just a habit of mine. I call all sailors Joey till I get to know them a little.
How come?
Oh, I don't know. Just like that. Look, let's dance, huh?
Well, I don't dance very well.
Oh, that's all right, Joey. Just hold me.
And then she took my hand in the same sweet, special way that Corey had 100 times, a thousand times before. Gently, tenderly, with her fingers lightly laced in mine. I remembered that day more than 2 years ago, when I was standing, leaning against the outside wall of my house. My eyes were closed because the sun was bright, and my head was back because it was nice and warm on my neck. And while I was standing there, like that, Corey came over and quietly stood beside me that way, the same way, with her head back and all, and she gently took my hand and placed her fingers in mine. And she said, so softly that I almost couldn't hear her,
"It must be lovely on the beach."
And I thought to myself, yeah, or on the dunes. And just as if she could read my mind, she said,
"Or on the dunes."
And the next thing I remember, I was lying on a blanket in a hollow with sand knolls all around. And the sun was blazing hot. Nice, though. And Corey turned over on the blanket, put her face next to mine, and she said,
"I love you, Joey. And when we're old enough, I want to marry you and have 3 children and live in a nice little house and have many friends and books to read and records on the phonograph. And I want to die with you in my arms."
And then she cried. I suddenly realized that I was holding this other girl in my arms. That we were dancing.
Where did you learn that step?
What?
The one you just did.
Well, I don't know. Just kind of like it.
Well, you said you couldn't dance.
Well, not very well, usually.
Seems to me we dance just fine together. Comfortable and easy. Like 2 people have...
Dance together a lot?
Yeah. You're not 21, are you?
No, 20.
Oh, you're supposed to be 21 to come in here.
Oh.
Oh, well, we won't tell them, will we? Truth is, I'm only 20 myself, but they don't know that.
Oh, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Gee, that's just the age... Corey, I'm sorry. I just can't help it.
Oh, of course you can't.
You're so much like her,
Oh, it's all right, Joey, I understand. You know, all the time we've been dancing, I've been lost in memories, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, but mine are funny and they're vague. I keep getting a certain picture in my mind that makes no sense.
What do you mean?
Well, I see myself with a boy, the one you remind me of, in a park.
Yeah?
It's very quiet and the full moon lights up his face. But I can't figure out who he is. The picture's clear. We're standing together looking up at a statue. The strange thing is, I don't seem to remember anything like that ever happening to me. I guess it did, but I just can't seem to remember.
But I could remember it. I could remember it very well. It was 2 years ago. And I was walking in Heatherton Park with Corey. There was a bright moon. Nobody else was there. Nobody in the whole park. And she stopped before the statue of Daniel Porter, who had said contributed more to the development of something or other than any other man in the state. She looked up at it as if she were going to mention something about it. She said,
"Dr. King says I'm not well."
And I could tell from the way she said it that it was serious. We walked through the park without saying another word. And the next day she went away to the sanitarium. And 3 months later she was dead.
Joey, what is it?
Hmm?
What's wrong?
She was asking me what was wrong. It was impossible to tell her. I was frightened. I tried to tell myself that there were other parks, other statues, other moonlit nights, but somehow I knew...
Joey, you look pale. What's the matter with you?
Could we go back and sit down?
Sure, come on. Don't you feel well?
I'll be all right. That park you pictured in your mind, that statue?
Yeah?
You were standing with some fella looking up at a statue. Where was the moon? Low? Just over his shoulder?
Huh?
Was the moon sort of low in the sky like it was sitting there right over the shoulder of the statue?
Yeah? I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
How could you know that?
And were you holding his hand?
Yeah.
With your fingers locked in his like... And then suddenly I saw it. Cupped in her open palm. A small silver medallion that I'd made for Corey 3 years before.
I cast it myself with a makeshift crucible and molds. She used to wear it on a chain.
What is that? Where did you get that?
What?
That thing in your hand. Let me see it. Give it to me.
Joey, what are you...
Give it to me. I lunged across the table, grabbed it from her, but my hand stuck against hers and she dropped it. Where is it?
What is it?
Where did it fall?
Joey.
It's too dark. I can't find it.
Oh, Joey.
Where did it go? Lolly! Give me some light!
Joey!
How did you get that, Medallion? How did you get it?
Medallion, I had a coin in my hand. What are you talking about?
That was no coin. Don't you think I can see?
What's the matter? This guy drunk?
No.
Will you turn some lights on?
Now, listen, Phil.
Mr. Bailey, it's all right.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, Muriel, but you better take it easy, sailor. We don't want no trouble here.
Oh, Joey, you don't know this place. You make any trouble and they'll...
What is this all about? What are you trying to do to me?
You listen to me for a minute.
What are you lying to me for? I saw it. I saw it in your hand.
Look, Joey, I mean it. You make any trouble or anything and they'll call the shore patrol. They will. Now, look, let's get out of here, okay? I'll turn in my tickets and change my clothes. We're not supposed to take dates out of here, so you go on up to that drugstore and wait for me. I'll meet you in a few minutes. After you're gone, I'll find it. I'll find what you're looking for.
So I went up to the drugstore and waited. I waited 10 minutes, 20 minutes. I waited half an hour. Then I went into the phone booth and I called the dance hall. This is the sailor who was in there a little while ago.
So, what do you want?
I'd like to talk to that girl I was dancing with. You know the one I mean.
Girls can't come to the phone.
Why not?
Because they're working, that's why not.
This girl I was with, she...
I'm telling you they're all busy. Now get lost, will you?
Now, you listen to me, mister. I want you to put that girl on the phone and...
Now look, sailor. Go stick your head in a pail someplace, will you, and cool off.
Hey! No, he won't. Let me off the phone. I found her and I'm not gonna lose her. I'm gonna find that guy. I'm not gonna make him fool out of me. There he is.
Now look, you back again?
Where is she?
Taking my advice, sailor.
Where is she?
What's the matter with you?
Is she still here?
Look, what are you making a stink for?
She said she'd meet me.
Who did?
This girl.
Which girl? What's her name?
It was... I don't know. She didn't tell me her name.
I saw the front of that sailor.
Is this the one?
No.
Look, you see this guy in here?
Sure.
Who's he dancing with?
He wasn't dancing with nobody.
What?
I gave him a pitch, but he just walked over and sat down by himself at the back table in the corner. He just sat there staring at the table talk for about half an hour. Then he walked out.
What are you?
You remember me, don't you, honey? You gave me a cigarette.
So what do you tell me you were dancing with somebody for?
What's the matter with you? You came over to our table. Remember, I was looking for something.
You're looking for something, all right. In just about a minute, you're going to get it. Now, pack up. You hear me?
Now, here. You see this?
It's a picture of some dame. He showed it to me. He keeps saying she works here. I think he's cracked or something.
You got the wrong place. She don't work here. Let's go.
I'm telling you, I was sitting with her, dancing with her. Where are you? Are you down here? Where are you?
You're really asking for it, boy. You know that, don't you?
Get your hands off me. I said get your hands off me.
Okay, buddy. Just about enough out of you.
Oh, you... I came to the next morning in sick bay on the ship. I couldn't do anything but lay there and think about this girl. I told the ship's doctor about it.
You've been under a great strain lately, Joey. I'm going to recommend that your duties be suspended for a few days at least.
You want me to stay here?
Yes.
In sick bay?
That's right.
What do you think, I'm crazy or something? You want to keep an eye on me?
I said you've been under a strain, that's all. I don't think you've ever really gotten over the shock of Corey's passing away. You've been thinking a lot about her lately, haven't you? I mean in these last weeks, before you even saw this other girl in the drugstore.
Yes, I have.
Well, isn't it possible that you simply wanted her back so much that...
that my imagination was playing tricks on me?
Something like that, yes. I want you to stay right there in that bed.
Well, I lay there for about a week. I guess I was just about convinced that's the way it was. I mean, it was the only thing I could think of that seemed to explain everything. One day they told me I could get up and they brought me my clothes. And then I found the silver medallion in one of my shoes. That's where it must have fallen when she dropped it. There was no question about it. It was the one I had made for Corey. At her funeral, at the reception, I had been the last one in line to look at her. I'd reached into the coffin and placed the medallion in her sweet, cool hand and gently curled her fingers over it. And then they closed the lid. I never told that to the ship's doctor. Do you think I should have?
Suspense. You've been listening to The Silver Shoe, written especially for Suspense by Robert Reddick.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from August 12th, 1962 on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonnier. Thanks for tuning in.